Hello and welcome to the 25th episode of the Jam Bass Podcast. I'm your host Andy Kahn, and joining me today will be my co-host Scott Bernstein. Hey Scotty, how you doing?
I'm doing excellent, AK. I'm excited to talk about lots of developments in the music world over the past few weeks.
Excellent. So hopefully by now you're familiar with our format. Scotty B and I will start the episode with the rundown, featuring a discussion of news stories from the past few weeks. Next, we have David Onigman doing double duty. First, Davo chats tour stories with Billy Strings. Then, Dave goes reeling in the years with Ron Artis. Both interviews took place last month at the Hangtown Music Festival. Stay tuned for those segments, but for now, let's dig into the rundown. Scotty, what's up first?
Well, Bob Weir is approaching the tail end of his inaugural Bob Weir and Wolf Brothers tour with bassist Don Was and drummer Jay Lane. He's had a number of guests since the run has started, including at the Ryman, where he had Buddy Miller and John Oates and Margot Price. But the last five shows of the tour in a row have featured special guests, and it's been an eclectic collection of players. The trio's recent run started, of the shows that had guest spots, started on November 8th at the Landmark in Syracuse, where harpist Michaela Davis sat in on portions of both sets and the encore. The Rochester native first came out at the end of the opening set and added to Birdsong, and that's one song that's been a real centerpiece of this tour. She later added an unusual and particularly cool sound to Wharf Rat and China Rider in the second set. Yet the real treat, at least in my opinion, in Syracuse, was the cover of Neil Young's Down by the River that kicked off the encore. Weir and Davis shared vocals on what's been one of the biggest surprises thus far when it's come to song choices during the tour. And then she stuck around to help end the show with Ripple. And the parade of guests continued this past Friday night at the Capitol Theater in Port Chester. This time it was Bobby and Jay's longtime Rat Dog bandmate Kenny Brooks who sat in, and he sat in on most of the show. I really liked what Kenny added to the mix, especially within the context of the whole tour. There hasn't been much in the way of horns, and it was nice to hear a saxophonist with those three musicians. Weir and Wolf Brothers have thrown a number of Rat Dog staples into the set list that run, and one of my favorite sequences to emerge thus far has been a pairing of Ashes and Glass and Don't Let Go. Brooks starred on the Ashes and Glass into Don't Let Go, into Ashes and Glass as part of that first night at the Cap, and also helped out on Little Red Rooster and Cassidy in the first set. He returned for a full Weather Report suite and a Dark Star featuring Tomorrow Never Knows by the Beatles in the middle and Easy Answers in the second set, and then also contributed to the Broke Down Palace encore. Let's hear some of Bob Weir and Weir Brothers and Kenny Brooks in action on Dark Star at the Cap. Bob Weir and Wolf Brothers returned to the Cap on Saturday, and this time their special guest was Bob's old The Dead bandmate, Warren Haynes. Haynes, who is a resident of Westchester County, where the Cap is located, made his short time on stage count with a blistering the other one that fed into Not Fade Away to end the second set. And then it was a raucous Turn On Your Love Light encore featuring Warren and the trio. And then, when the tour resumed on Monday night in Washington, D.C., we were called upon yet another old bandmate. And this time it was John Kathlasek of Further. John K. withstood some technical issues, but he still shined on playing in the band and Scarlet Begonias within the second set. He then came back to augment the trio on an interesting version of Playing in the Band Reprise and a quick romp through Touch of Grey to end the night. And then, finally, on Tuesday night, the tour stopped at the Fillmore in Philadelphia. J-Rad and Ghost-like guitarist Tom Hamilton was the guest this time, as he added to Peggy O and Birdsong in the second set and the Ripple encore. Andy, what are your thoughts on the tour thus far?
Yeah, I've listened to tapes or watched webcasts of the bulk of the tour, and it's clear they're starting to hit their stride after taking a little time to coalesce. You know, a few shows into the tour, Jam Bass's Chad Bernison spoke with Don Was, who was enthusiastic about getting to play with Bobby. When Chad asked Don his thoughts about the start of the tour, he said, "This is the greatest time I've ever had in my life. It's just the coolest thing I've ever been involved with. It resonates on a really profound level as both a human being and a musician. I think the biggest surprise for me was what it's like to be on the musician's end of an audience like this, to have that aimed at you like this. This audience is unbelievable. It's just a tidal wave of good vibes and positive energy, and that still surprises me. The audience is the thing with this, but it really is a communal experience. It's like going to a really great church. It's beautiful. These folks love Bobby so much, and they love the songs, and love getting together with each other and meeting like-minded people. I don't think people realize how enormous this is." You know, and they really have been getting better as the tour's been going along. You could tell the familiarity between the three players is growing. They've been playing off a fairly tight catalog of songs. They're still adding new tunes like Passenger Tuesday Night in Philly. And I think the guests have helped the trio evolve by constantly adding new elements. It's not just up to the three guys on stage to find new territory to cover. The guests come in and inject newness just by being present. You know, a lot of the guests have been largely lead instruments, lead guitar, saxophone. Even Michaela's harp playing was more akin to a lead guitar. We've seen from Bobby with the duo shows with Phil Lesh earlier that he's pretty much going to stick to his rhythm guitar parts. So having an additional lead musician on stage has definitely helped. And Bobby sticking to his parts is almost like hearing isolated guitar tracks. It's really highlighted just exactly what it is that he adds to the classic Grateful Dead songs that we've listened to countless times. In some instances, like, say, China Cat Sunflower, for example, it's not always clear right away what song is being started. The familiar melody takes a little longer to emerge because Bobby's not necessarily playing the typical lead introduction to the song. And the guests have also been familiar, largely, you know, Warren, Kenny, John Kay, and even Tommy, they're familiar with the material and with each other. And I think that has also led to a lot of the success of the collaborations. And again, I think we got to point out some of the interesting cover choices. That Down by the River the other night with Michaela was exquisite. Sunshine Superman by Donovan is interesting. The My Creole Belle with John Oates the other night at the Ryman. So the guests are also helping expand the song selection a little bit, which has been great. So I'm excited to see how the rest of the tour goes. What do you think, B?
Yeah, I would say I feel similarly. It took me a little while to come around to the format of the tour because, as you mentioned, it's a little weird without having a lead guitar player. But Bobby's had a really hell of a year, and for somebody at his age to be experimenting and still breaking boundaries and doing the duo tour and then hitting large stadiums with Dead and Company and now playing more intimate venues with Bob Weir and Wolf Brothers, it really gives fans a chance to see him in all of these different formations. And I agree with you. I really like what the guests have added to the mix, and I can't wait to see who else is coming out. And so it's been really cool, and it's been loose too. Bobby's told some stories at the Cap. He talked about the Dead's first time playing there, and he actually picked up a call via his iPhone watch from Taj Mahal during one of those shows, and just shows how loose and really this run has been. And he really, and you know, Bob wasn't the only one that in the Dead world that had guests recently. John Mayer of Dead and Company made his first West Coast appearance with Joe Russo's Almost Dead on Friday. And Mayer sat in for the entire second set and the encore at the Wiltern in Los Angeles. And he even sang. That's something he didn't do at Brooklyn Bowl the first two times he sat in with J-Rad. I highly recommend The Wheel That Opened and the stellar pairing of Here Comes Sunshine and They Love Each Other. John sang the second of those. Andy, what else happened over the past few weeks?
Well, let me tell you about the stacked lineups for two different kinds of tributes that were announced. Willie Nelson will perform and be honored at Willie, Life and Songs of an American Outlaw, a Willie Nelson All-Star Concert Celebration. The event will be held at Nashville's Bridgestone Arena on January 12th. Derek Trucks, Susan Tedeschi, the Abbott Brothers, Alison Krauss, George Strait, Jack Johnson, John Mellencamp, Chris Christopherson, Leanne Womack, Lyle Lovett, Nora Jones with the Little Willies, Sheryl Crow, and Vince Gill have all been confirmed to participate in the show put together by Blackbird Presents. That's a promotion company that previously put together tributes to Greg Allman, Lynyrd Skynyrd, the Neville Brothers, and more, including the Outlaw Music Festival that Willie Nelson has been headlining the past few years. A more somber tribute comes in honor of the late Chris Cornell. I Am the Highway, a tribute to Chris Cornell, will take place at the Forum in Los Angeles on January 16th, featuring performances from members of Soundgarden, Temple of the Dog, and Audioslave, those three bands Cornell co-founded. Foo Fighters, Metallica, and Ryan Adams are also on the lineup, with Jimmy Kimmel set to host. Proceeds from the concert will benefit the Chris and Vicky Cornell Foundation and the Epidermolysis Bullosa Medical Research Foundation. Scotty, can you give us a recap of the tours that have been announced since our last episode?
Absolutely, and I apologize that having to pronounce that fell on you. That was a toughie. And so in terms of tours that have been announced, man, there has been a slew of them over the past few weeks. And we'll start with the String Cheese Incident, who begin a celebration of their 25th anniversary with a batch of West Coast dates in February, following their international incident in Jamaica in January. Cheese then heads to St. Louis's fabulous Fox Theater in April and plays a series of shows in New Orleans to end the month. Cheese also confirmed an appearance at the first day of this year's Del Fest, and then three nights at the Capitol Theater in Port Chester over Memorial Day weekend. And then there's J-Rad, Joe Russo's Almost Dead, who now have 28 dates confirmed for 2019. And I get the feeling that that will be it for the band, besides potential festival appearances. J-Rad had already announced three nights at the Cap in January, and then have four dates scheduled in February, including two nights in St. Louis. And St. Louis getting a lot of good music. The five-piece go on to focus on the Northeast in March, before continuing a tradition of playing two late nights in New Orleans during Jazz Fest. This time around, they'll perform during the festival's first weekend. It's then off to the Pacific Northwest at the end of May and beginning of June for Almost Dead. And next comes some of their biggest gigs yet, including stops at Chicago's Northerly Island, The Greek in L.A., and their return to Red Rocks, and those all take place over the summer. J-Rad goes on to end the tour in September with multiple stops in Texas and concerts in Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. 2018 was another great year for J-Rad, and excited to see what 2019 brings. In other tour news, Fish bassist Mike Gordon will hit the road with his five-piece solo band in March. Gordon's tour spans March 8th through the 24th and ends with that band's first ever four-night stand at a venue. Mike and company will play the Sinclair in Cambridge between March 21st and 24th. Mo, the infamous String Dusters, Galactic, Soundtribe, Gary Clark Jr., Carl Denson's Tiny Universe, the Disco Biscuits, Panda Bear, Punch Brothers, the Zac Brown Band, Lettuce, Yonder Mountain String Band, Railroad Earth, and the newly formed The Allman Betts Band featuring Devon Allman and Dwayne Betts are just some of the other acts who announced dates recently. As always, just head to Jambase for the latest details. Andy, speaking of Fish, it's now been well over a week since their fall tour ended in Las Vegas. How is the Kasvat Vox set sitting with you after a few weeks to digest what they did?
Well, I have a couple of main takeaways from Halloween, but first let's mention that Live Fish updated the Halloween show page to confirm songwriting credits for the Kasvat Vox set. Each song was credited collectively to the four members of Fish: Trey Anastasio, Mike Gordon, Paige McConnell, and John Fishman. The songwriting credits confirmed that the Halloween performance was indeed a hoax, and that Fish had concocted the Kasselbach backstory. While it's not all that surprising news, it was interesting to learn, as our own Devo speculated on the last episode, that all of the songs were credited to all of the members of the band. So my first takeaway has to do with the songwriting itself. Whether it was restricting Page to the synths and keeping him away from his piano, or their attempt at collective songwriting, this batch of songs sounds far different from anything they've been writing recently. From the lyrics and the vocals to the song structures themselves, sonically, the set just sounds so different, and in a really fresh and exciting way. It's really refreshing to see these new approaches landing so successfully. My other main takeaway has to do with the longevity of the new songs. You know, hopefully they'll be played live again, and when they do, how are they going to evolve? None of them were really jammed out at Halloween, but several seem like they have the potential to be jammed vehicles. And, you know, looking back at the Chilling Thrilling Sounds Halloween set, only about half of those songs have been reintroduced to the repertoire and been played regularly since. So it'll be interesting to see how many of these 10 new songs make it back into the regular rotation. Scotty, what do you think?
Man, I can't stop listening to the Faceplant Into Rock set. I mean, holy earworms, Batman. Those songs are just so stuck inside my head. Say It to Me, Santos, and Turtle in the Clouds are among my favorites. And like you, I really hope these songs are added to the repertoire as soon as during the upcoming New Year's run. I think, unlike the Chilling Thrilling songs, these songs lend themselves more to becoming jam vehicles. With the Chilling Thrilling songs, it's more the little accents that they've added that make it differently, or where Page throws in the vocal samples. But as I was listening to that set that night and have continued to, there are definitely parts that could be platforms for great improvisation. So, and it'll also be interesting to see how it translates without the theatrics and the white instruments. And so all of these questions will be answered soon. And, you know, after the Baker's Dozen residency in 2017 and pulling off that set in 2018, Fish has showed 35 years in, they are not stopping being a creative force. So, you know, good for them. And it's a great time to be a fan. And, you know, before we end the rundown, we should mention Jam Bass has teamed up with CID Presents to give away a trip to Fish's Riviera Maya destination event in Mexico. The winner of the contest will receive accommodations, access to the shows for two, airfare for two, and more. We'll be sure to include a link in the article accompanying the podcast, or simply hit the contest tab on our homepage. So that's it for the rundown. Now stay tuned as Devo presents Tour Stories with Billy Strings.
Alright, David Onigman here with Billy Strings backstage at the Hangtown Festival. We're being serenaded by the sounds of Melvin Seals and JGB. I think we're listening to a little tour up over you right now. Billy played a little Jerry in his set earlier just now as well. That was China Doll I was hearing, right, Billy?
Yeah, we played China Doll today.
Yeah.
It was a great set this afternoon. We had a good time. You know,
we love it here at Hangtown. Me and Billy were just chatting. We are going to do tour stories for this podcast segment. Billy's got two good ones we're going to talk about here. I heard something about a prison guitar and something about a stolen RV. And Billy's pulling up some notes here as well to make sure he gets some details correct on some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Billy, which one are we going to do first?
Well, yeah, the prison guitar, I guess, isn't so much of a tour story. But it's a recent, thing that happened to me where it's been a really intense kind of thing in my life, and it's this new guitar. Well, it's not a new guitar. It's actually, 60 years old or something.
But it's new to you.
50 years old. It's new to me. It lived in my grandmother's closet when I was a little kid, and then after my grandparents passed away, it lived in my uncle Bill's closet. And it's a guitar that my grandpa made when he was serving time in Jackson Prison in 1960 to 1962 up in Michigan.
I was gonna say, I know you're from Michigan. This is Michigan we're talking about here, closet and prison, everything. Okay.
Yep. So yeah, you know, I've been running up and down the road for the last 6 years and on tour, and you know, obviously I play guitar all the time. Guitar is my thing. And I just had this memory, you know, of this guitar. And when I was a little kid, I was kind of sneaking around in my grandma's closet, and I remember seeing it. And out of nowhere one day, I was at this gig, and I just got a hold of my uncle, and I was like, man, do you still have that guitar, you know? And see, he said, yeah, you know, your grandpa made it in prison, and it's been sitting there in the closet for years and years, and anyways, I'll bring it to you if you want to check it out. He said, I don't think you can really get it working or anything. Anyhow, he gave it to me, and I put it right in the hands of the best luthier I know, Dave Johnson, Scale Model Guitars in Nashville, Tennessee. He's an amazing artist. He works on old guitars, and he builds guitars, and he's a craftsman. He's so good. Anyways, we just restored this thing completely, and it's been a long process, and it, you know, we had to put a truss rod in it, we had to make pickups, we did all this stuff, and it's been like a couple months of restoration, but it's finally finished.
Is it the guitar you were playing on stage today?
No, that's an acoustic guitar.
This is an electric.
It's an electric guitar.
Okay.
And it's so amazing. You know, I posted about it on Instagram a bunch. I don't know if you listeners out there are on Instagram, but you can find the story on there. Just look at the hashtag prison guitar, and you'll find it. It's been a really bizarre story. And so now I've had it for a couple weeks, and it really speaks to me, and it's just the most amazing guitar. And, you know, my grandpa's been dead since 2001, and it's really wild, man. It's like he's speaking again, you know. It's the most amazing thing that happened. This guitar.
Are you ever gonna think about bringing it on the road, or is it gonna stay home?
It's in the back of the van.
It's in the van right now.
Yeah.
Okay, but it has not yet made it to a stage, or it has?
It has.
Okay, not today.
Yeah, I played it on stage with Marcus King at his family gathering there in Asheville at Pisgah Brewing Company. Yeah, that was the
breakout. That was the first time.
In it, man, that sucker cuts, man. It's nice. Awesome. It's just incredible. So I just thought that was a, you know, that's always an interesting story to kind of talk about, and it's fresh on my mind. So
that's amazing. And looking into the future, you think you're gonna keep it on the road with you, and like maybe bring it out on special occasions?
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool.
Whenever I get the chance to play electric guitar, I have it just in case Railroad Earth asks me to sit in, or you know, somebody, maybe Leftover Salmon or whoever, you know.
A band that would fit an electric guitar.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes bands ask me to sit in, and it's like, okay, well, what tune? And it's like, well, man, I could play electric on that, you know, because it's really fun to do, you know.
Well, after this, I'll have to try and see if you there's a good opening band for you tomorrow night. Maybe there's a good occasion for it there. I'll tell you about it once we're done rapping on this.
Awesome. Yeah. And so, tour stories.
So that's the prison guitar story, which is amazing, and we got an actual tour story, something about a stolen RV.
All right, so
this is the one that we have our cell phone pulled up here. So what is this? What's the published date on this article you're going to pull from here with the?
This was August 1st, 2018.
So this is very recent as well. We're making history.
Well, what happened was this was actually a year ago. We're getting ready to do our annual Thanksgiving run that we do sometimes in Michigan. We've done it the last couple years. And we go to the intersection in Grand Rapids, and we play a couple nights, and we're going to go up to Manistee. And we did the same thing last year. And, you know, for the most part, we've been driving ourselves in a van or a Sprinter with a trailer behind us. But for this run, we decided to just get a hold of somebody to drive us, not necessarily a tour bus, but so we got this this fella that, you know, my manager had worked with previously for on High Times events.
This Pat?
My manager, Bill.
Bill Warner.
Yeah.
Pat's your booking agent?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, Bill. Okay.
Anyhow, so, you know, The guy owed Bill a favor because something didn't work out right the last time they had done business. So basically, you know, Bill was like, dude, I got this free RV for a weekend and a driver and everything, and he'll, you know, drive you. And it, you know, it was awesome. I mean, we got in this RV and they drove us around and it was all cool. And it was a guy and a girl that was driving us around. And so we played this weekend of gigs and, you know, went home and everything was fine. And then, you know, like I said, months and months later, my girlfriend was up in Sault Ste. Marie, and I mean, I guess everything wasn't exactly fine.
what exactly wasn't fine, if you can?
I mean, it was like, I think my girlfriend, like, caught one of the drivers, like, trying to steal her boots.
And then,
one of the members of the band has this Nintendo Switch thing. It's like a little...
Members of your band?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's a really cool little video game thing that you can play when you're driving in the van. You can play Zelda on there. It's pretty neat. But that came up missing. And it was just like, what the hell? Where did all of our shit go?
A couple things are walking away.
And so anyhow, we got done with that tour and, you know, months and months go by. And then my girlfriend, she was up visiting her family in Sault Ste. Marie. And she was, you know, sitting around the table, and her sister was talking about this, you know, this thing that happened. These couple that got busted, they were up on Sugar Island, and it's a very small little island up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Anyhow, yeah, you know, word gets around up there pretty quick. Yeah, some couple got busted or something for running a fake business or something, and Allie didn't think nothing of it. And so the next morning, Allie's sitting there drinking coffee with her grandpa and grandma, and the TV's on, and all of a sudden, you know, she saw what her sister was talking about on the news. Yeah, couple busted for using stolen RV to create fake business. And the two drivers, their mugshots were on the TV screen, and Allie's sitting there, you know, spitting out her coffee, basically like, we fucking went on tour in a stolen RV. We fucking went on tour in a stolen RV with two people that had stolen the RV and were running a fake business. I swear to you, like, this is absolutely true.
So they're busted a month or so ago, but this is a year ago.
It was a year ago that we did
that. Where was the run of shows that this happened?
It was in Michigan.
Oh, these were all the, like, local shows in Michigan.
Yep, yep.
To class it up, and Bill was trying to do the...
Yeah, you know, and well, because they owed him already. Because,
right, yeah, yeah.
You know, I think High Times hired them for something, and they came with the wrong vehicle or something.
Ah.
And so, you know.
There's a never follow a hippie to a second location joke in there somewhere, I think.
Anyways, I cannot believe that. I mean, yeah, we were on tour with criminals, driving us around from gig to gig. They took us to a radio show. They took us to WYCE so we could record on the radio. They took us to the intersection. They took us to our gigs up north.
Well, to be fair, I've listened to a bunch of your tunes. There's a lot of talk in the lyrics, a lot of them, about some criminal activity that are happening in some of the stories that you weave up there.
You're not saying that I manifested
this. Maybe it's giving you some more real world experience.
Yeah, I mean, that I think so too. I gotta write a song about that somewhere.
I was gonna say, is this in a tune yet?
I ain't swimming 7 days, heaven ain't even free. Methamphetamine has got a damn good hold of me. My tweaker friends have got me to the point of no return. I just took the lighter to the bulb and watched it burn. This life of sin has got me here. Well, it's got me back in prison once again. I used my only phone call to contact my daddy. Got 20 long years for some dust in a baggie.
Wild. I mean, my family's been through some crazy shit. Like, you know, my family, my mom and my grandfather, my grandpa was an outlaw, man. The guy that built that guitar. And my mom's the same way. I grew up with some hillbilly, music-loving, kind of crazy motherfuckers, man.
If you don't mind me asking, what was he serving time for during the creation of the prison guitar?
He and his friend had... come across this big old stack of checks and the embosser that you could, you know, stamp down the red ink on there, and you could pick out what number you want Oh, sure, 5,000 sounds good. Boom, and then you emboss the check, which made it legit, and they were passing and cashing these checks. Now, him and his friend got in trouble for that, and my grandpa hit the road. He was gonna run to Colorado or something and try to make a break for it. My grandma convinced him to come back and to just serve his time, to turn himself in. So that's, during that 2 years is when he built the guitar. I think it was made out of a table. Like,
wow.
I think the body was made out of a tabletop and the neck was made out of a leg. It's all cedar. It's wild, but now it's fully restored. We were able to salvage everything that he did on there. We didn't change the fretboard or anything. It's all the original stuff, except for the pickups, you know, those are
sure.
brand new. All the
yeah.
wiring, new frets, new binding, new tuners, new bridge, stuff like that. But we tried to maintain the essence of the guitar as it is, and it's really cool. So, yeah, I mean, there's two stories for you from me.
Those are some good ones. Before we let you go here, and we'll all go check out the rest of this Melvin Seals and JGB set, tell us a little bit about that band that you got up there on the road these days. Who is who's in there these days? Who are those guys?
Well, Billy Failing is on five-string banjo and singing his ass off, and he's been with me the longest. He's just an amazing player. He grew up in Portland, Oregon, and since moved to Nashville. I think he's getting ready to relocate towards Colorado himself. He likes the mountains. So.
And are you still in Michigan?
No, I live in Nashville.
You live in Nashville. Okay.
Yep. And so on mandolin, we got Jared Walker, and he is, I mean, damn, he's smoking on the mandolin, man. I grew up playing bluegrass, and I played with a lot of people, you know. I've been out with David Grisman, and I've played with a lot of players, you know, Ronnie McCurry's and David Grisman's and all these folks. And I'm telling you, man, Jared Walker is one of the finest mandolin players I've heard. I'm honored to stand on stage next to that guy every night. He pushes me, man. You know, it's like he plays something, and then I'm like, oh, shit, like I got to step it up, you know.
You guys really have something up there. It's like... For lack of a better term, it's kind of more like metal grass up there sometimes than it is bluegrass.
That's
you guys
wild.
Are really doing something up there.
Yeah, and then, you know, we wouldn't be able to do it all without the backbone and the, you know, we're all leaning on Royal Massat, and that's the bass player. He comes from Texas, and he lives in Nashville now. He's an amazing player. You know, you've probably seen him out there with Warren Haynes and stuff. He was out with Warren for a little while doing a tour, and he's just played with everybody, and amazing player, you know. He's like Royal's like the guy that he really gets creative with me, man. We're able to go off on the most wild of kind of journeys, and somehow he hangs on with me and I hang on to him, you know. We kind of help each other get through these crazy moments up on stage, you know. And he's got big ears, and I mean that in the best way.
Yeah.
He listens up there. His ears are fucking on, man, and it's so cool to be able to just play something and know that he's listening, you know, and he's paying attention and he's fully there with you. He's never just phoning it in. He's always right there, you know, like no matter what happens in the song, he's ready to go there. It doesn't matter what happens.
That's great. That's great. And quickly, brand new record, or how many months? So your record's like 2-3 months old at this point?
Oh, man.
More than that.
Yeah, it's probably more than that. I think it came out last year.
I'm going to edit this out. It did?
Yeah.
Oh, you guys, I'm sorry, I'm getting confused. You just had a Spotify thing that released last Friday, right? Like 5 tracks.
Yeah.
I got to push to my phone with a new Billy Strings thing. That's what I'm thinking of.
Okay, yeah, that was our vinyl sessions.
Yes,
we just did, and those in Nashville. And
those sound great.
That was fun. Thanks,
man.
I didn't know it was going to be on Spotify or whatever, but
it did, yeah.
So cool.
Spotify does a good job of telling you on every Friday, based on your listening history, what it is that you might like. And it was like a new Billy Strings tune. I was like, really?
Damn.
Oh, it's a session. Oh, cool.
That's cool, man. Thank you, Spotify.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Bobby. Shane Tobin. Shout out to Shane Tobin and Spotify.
Yeah, Shane. Thanks. What else?
What I was going to ask here, outside of Jambase, where can our listeners keep up with you guys on the internet? Where's the best way to find you? Instagram, Twitter, etc.
Yeah, Facebook, Instagram, Facebook, BillyStrings.com.
BillyStrings.com. Sounds like I missed a pretty good Instagram story on this prison guitar. Otherwise, that would have been better read, I think.
Yeah, well, you can just search the hashtag.
Hashtag prison guitar.
Hashtag prison guitar.
I have an omission from my follow list. I think after we wrap here, I got to follow you so I know this for next time.
And I believe there might be an article coming out about the story about the whole guitar with pictures of the restoration
awesome.
And everything. But if you look at hashtag prison guitar, you'll see the guitar. All the way from when it was, you know, just out of grandma's closet to what it looks like brand now, fully restored. Pretty cool.
That's great, man. All right, well, best of luck to you the rest of the year, and thanks for the time, Billy.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, cheers. Okay, David Onigman here with the Jam Bass Podcast. I'm here with Ron Artis II. He just wrapped his first of two sets, and we're talking in the middle of his set break here. That's Billy Strings on the main stage you hear right now. Ron, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks so much, Dave. I'm glad to be here, man.
Yeah. So we're going to do the segment that we call Reeling in the Years here. And while Ron's career is still young compared to some people we talk about on the Jam Bass Podcast, he's maybe been doing it longer than some of the folks that we talk to. So, Ron, you come from a very musical family. So since this is Reeling in the Years, we're going to try to go start to current. So let's talk about some of your earliest memories playing music and sort of the... way your family played into that.
Yeah, so my earliest memories making music, actually, we have a photo of me at 1 year old, and my dad's like holding me so I can crawl across the keyboard.
You really remember it?
Yeah, I remember it. I don't remember it as physically as I remember the photo,
right,
but
yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I wish I could be like, oh yeah, I remember it. It was like Mozart, man. But no, my earliest memory of physically doing it, I was about 3 or 4, and I wanted to be able to be in my dad's band.
So that was, back then, was it the Artis family band?
Or no, this was before.
What was your dad's band's name?
So my dad would just would do local bands around when he wasn't doing his work. He did work with Charlemagne and a bunch of people in Motown when they moved to California. And so when he wasn't doing all that stuff, he's at home, he would like have little bands that he would do projects at different clubs or venues. And I was always like, I want to go out and play gigs with dad. I want to record with dad in the studio. And my mom would always say, "Well, if you want to do that, you got to run your scales. You got to practice." So every day.
So, what was the first instrument that you picked
piano?
Up? Piano was the first one.
Okay. Piano was first, man. I would sit there and run scales all the time, and in hopes of being able to play with my dad one day.
And how old are you now?
I'm 32.
32. Okay, so we're talking about 30 years ago.
About 30 years ago. Yeah.
Your first memories of crazy this stuff.
Crazy to hear that out loud, though, man. I don't know.
Well, I hate to break it to you. We just watched you on stage. You're married. You have two kids. You are you are in your
30s. I'm in my 30s. It has happened.
So that set you just played and a lot of what you're doing, you played some keys, but you primarily played guitar. How old are you when you first pick up the guitar?
The first time when I really picked up guitar was 13.
13.
I remember it because it was my birthday, and my parents brought a guitar and a guitar amp home from a garage sale.
And this is, you moved to Hawaii at this point, right? You moved to Hawaii when you were 3 or 4?
We moved to Hawaii when I was about 5.
5, okay.
Yeah. So I was born in Burbank, California, and parents moved to Hawaii, wanted to find a nice spot to raise a family. And I'm glad, man. I love Hawaii.
That's great. All right, so you pick up the piano when you're about 3 years old. Was there a first time that you actually played music with your dad in one of the bands? Do you have an early memory of sort of your first guest appearance playing with one of those?
Yeah, it was. I think I was a little older at the time. I was maybe about 8 or 9.
Okay.
And my dad was playing a gig, and he always had two keyboards because he would stack them above each other, do bass and left-handed stuff and pads on the bottom keyboard, and up top you do a solo and a piano and everything.
And was that your dad's primary instrument, the keyboard?
Yeah, okay. Piano was the primary instrument. So when I got to sit in, he would let me play the bass into the keyboard or play a melody line on the lead, and oh man, I was in the clouds, dude. I was like, oh yeah, I'm doing good. And then of course, like when they weren't playing a simple song and I tried to keep along, I realized how much practice I had to do. I was like, okay, you know, in the key of C major, there's not much bad notes I can hit,
just
you know.
Stick mostly to the white ones. Yeah, yep.
And it's easy. And that was kind of my earliest memories around then, I guess. It probably was a little earlier than 8, but I think it was around 8 years old. That's what I remember.
And you are the oldest of how many children?
There's 11 kids in my family.
And you're the oldest.
I'm the second oldest. I have an older sister.
Oh, you have an older sister. Okay.
Yeah.
But you are named after your father. He is Ron the
yeah,
first.
Yeah, so I'm named after my dad, man. And yeah, what an honor to carry the name.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what was the first band that you formed, sort of not sitting in with your dad or not just like playing, you know, at an open mic in Hawaii? What was the first band in the progression of bands leading up to the trio that we just saw?
I think
you
it was called the Mango Tree Band.
Mango Tree Band? That sounds very Hawaiian.
Yeah, it lasted, I think, 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Was your brother Stefan in that one as well?
No, it was me and some friends I met. And it was really interesting. I was, I guess, about 16, 17, I remember, man, somewhere around there. Actually, no, I was about 18.
18?
Yeah, and the family band was just becoming an idea.
Okay.
But then my other siblings were starting to learn instruments and everything, but we formed this band. It was me and two other guys, drummer, two guitar players, and then a bassist. And we were playing, man, and we rehearsed maybe one song, and I don't know, it was like... I don't know. I won't say any names, but a couple of the guys couldn't stay sober, and I didn't know what it meant to like manage a band or rehearse a band and
you are
all the
18,
important things.
After all.
I'm 18. Yep. I was just like, you know, we get together and you know, we just all of a sudden all know what to rehearse and know what to play, and that's it. And apparently, that's not how bands work.
So at that point, had you written your first tune? Were you trying any original material at that point? Were you guys just trying to play covers and
yeah,
stuff?
I think we were writing songs, but I wasn't approaching it like writing songs like, oh, let's write a song. No, it was more like, here's some chord changes, let's just do some stuff with it, and the song's going to start itself, grow itself, and end itself. That's what we kind of thought. And of course, my dad would, he would listen in to the songs and whatnot, but he would try not to give any input. He would like,
let
want
you
to
figure
get
it out
space.
Yourself. And
yeah. When I was practicing or learning from my dad, it was a whole different story. Like, my dad was a very strict teacher. But he was very open about, he asked me, he's like, do you want to learn to play this and be the best you can possibly be? Or do you want to just have fun with the music? Either way is fine. Just let me know. And I was like, I want to be the best guitar player there is. He's like, you arrogant little prick. There's no such thing. He's like, there's no such thing as the best keyboard player, best piano player, best guitar player, and there never will be, because music is art, and there's no better or best. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense, but I'm going to learn to play 1,000 notes. And boy, we love to get on each other's nerves for a while, but...
was he your primary teacher?
Yeah, my dad was primary teacher, and my dad was my best friend. All the way up till he passed away, we could talk about anything under the sun with each other and just be honest about everything. And I appreciated that honesty and that space.
How many years ago did you lose your father?
About 8 years ago, okay. 2018. Doesn't feel that long ago, but that's how life goes.
Yeah,
emotions. Yeah, so.
So around then, is that the first time the family band starts to form, where you're playing in a band with? With siblings?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about the family band?
So the family band, I want to say, I think it officially started when I was about 19, when my brother, oh man, I'm dating myself here. Wait, he was 13, so Stefan. We have to do the math ourselves.
Who's your drummer in the truth, in Ron?
Yeah, Ortiz. So he was talking to my mom that he wanted to join a band that my dad was doing. He was doing a band, and it was me, my dad, and a friend of ours on drums. And the friend was lovely guy, great guy, I love him. But rehearsals and whatnot, I don't think he really stuck with rehearsals. So my brother wanted to get in, and my mom brought my brother over to my dad. It's like, Stefan said he wants to play drums with me in the band. My dad's like, oh really? Do you think you can handle this? Because my dad was serious and straight to the point when it came to the music, man. You put the time in and respect the craft. And so my brother was like, yeah. So he got there and he started trying to play the drums. He had absolutely no timing.
No timing. Had never really
no
practiced
feel.
The drums before.
And we were just like, oh, ouch. Okay, buddy. Dad's going to be really clear with you. And my dad was like, son. My mom was like, wait. Turn the drum kit left-handed just in case. Oh. He's lefty. Turn it around just maybe. My dad's like, all right, one more shot. Turn it around. It was night and day. Wow. I was like, I've never really believed in left-handed, right-handed guitar and drum and bass and all this stuff, but when I saw that, I was like, ooh, there's something there.
Is it mostly where they put the hi-hat
for the drums?
The
hi-hat and the kick.
And the kick.
So now his left foot is on the kick and is his dominant foot. And it made a big difference, and he never looked back from there, man.
Wow. He's also a very talented guitar player and songwriter
right? Yeah, so he went from drums to bass, keyboards, guitar, percussion, singing, harmonica, a bunch of stuff. He plays seven or eight instruments.
Do you play all the same seven or eight? I've seen you play keys. Mm-hmm. I've seen you play guitar. Do you ever mess around on the drums or?
I do just that. I mess around.
Just
with
mess
the drums.
Around.
Yeah. When I'm in a company of other musicians, I stick to my three instruments, which are guitar, bass, and piano. And voice. Those are my main instruments.
Yep.
Yeah. And then, recently in the last year and a half, ukulele, which
we're
having a lot of fun with. So
that's
it's like
just
all
a year
the
and a half? Man,
yeah.
We saw you play that at the Four Peaks Festival.
Yeah.
A year ago. So you would just.
I just
up
started,
you,
man. I had just learned it. It was the NAMM show before that.
Some
so
people
it was,
are too good.
Thanks, man. I just started it. And I fell in love with it because it's just such a wonderful instrument and such a wonderful voice. So.
So the family band includes Stefan and you and how many other members of the family?
So, and the full blossoming season
of
the family band,
at
its peak, there are at least 10 of us in that band.
Wow.
Yeah, there was my dad leading it, myself playing electric guitar and keyboards and singing, my mother singing, my brother Victor on bass, Stefan on drums, my sister Praise Jesus on keyboards, and she has a big voice. And she's only 5 foot... four on a good day, I think, and she's awesome. And then my other sister Spirit would play percussions and sing background. My brother Thunderstorm, I haven't even mentioned him yet, he's a beast of a musician.
He's still active, right?
Yeah, he's touring.
Yeah
he's serious, he's really serious. He plays percussions, harmonica. His primary right now is acoustic guitar and singing. He's a songwriter and so
he came out with you at some recent shows
he's incredible. We haven't been able to play that much together recently because we have two different tour schedules now, which is a good problem to have, man.
Exactly.
I love seeing him out there. And so, and that was the peak of the family band. And then towards 2011, the year after my dad passed away, I was leading the family band. And then we did our own festival. We produced our own music festival, which we were so stoked to do.
This is on Hawaii?
Yeah, this was in Hawaii, and much to our disbelief, we were in major debt. Apparently, you can't just throw a free festival and rent a bunch of gear and a stage. And
oh, it was a free festival.
Yeah, and expect it to pay for itself. It just doesn't work that way. And so, but it was fun, and towards the end of the year and everything, everyone was just started trying to find ways they wanted to do music and everything, and then I met my now wife, Yulia, and we got married, and I took some time off, came back, and got the family band back up to par. And now, me being the oldest member of the family band, I kind of inherited that quality control gene of the respect the craft. And by that point, we're all pretty grown up. I'm about, 25 at that point and all that. So I heard that infamous line say, it's not your band. What the heck are you talking about? And I was like, oh, no! I was like, Yeah, it is. I'm older than you. And that never works in a family, right? It's a,
certainly a family of 11.
Yeah, it's a family of 11, man. And everybody is intensely creative, and we're all very outspoken. So no matter how many ways I point a finger at anyone else, I'm just as much in the same pot. So,
sure. Yeah.
So at that point...
That was when you felt it was time to lead a band that was not, you know, so large. And
Well, the family band kind of became two or three different family bands. And then we decided to put the family band on hiatus. And everyone started developing different projects. Mm-hmm. And long story short, me and my brother Thunderstorm did a lot of touring as a duo.
Okay.
And we named it Ron and Thunderstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a great time. We did an album. We did two albums together. And then I think it was 2015.
Okay, three years ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
On my birthday, because every year that I'm home in Hawaii, on my birthday, I have a Kani Kapila, which is Hawaiian for a jam.
Okay.
At my house. And I'd invite all the musicians that I met or known throughout the year, and we jam. And that's where I met Riley Potkaula. And he came in playing bass, and my brother was on drums at a jam. And this was the second time us three found each other at this Kani Kapila jamming together on my birthday. And I was like, guys, I think there's something happening here.
Nice.
And that was the birth of The Truth. Ron Artista II and The Truth. And that was 2015, man. And we've been jamming ever since.
And you guys, is it technically two records that this band has put together, the most recent just coming out a few months ago?
Yeah, the most recent came out, Soul Street. And
yeah, tell us a little bit about Soul Street. It's an awesome record, but I want to hear you talk a little bit out of here.
We had fun with that. So I write all the music and bring it to the band. And rather than approach it like, hey guys, these are the exact parts, played exactly, you know, don't deviate from the paper. I was like, here's the song, here's the idea, and this is what I've written on bass, drums, or whatever. And I want to hear your take. We're all artists, and we all have a brush, and we're going to take it to the canvas. And every time, it's never ceased to just, like, blow my mind. Just hearing what my brother comes up with and hearing what Riley comes up with. And on this particular record, we worked with, like, there's three different bass players on there. I don't think I got any drum parts in there. My brother's doing all the drums. we're all doing a lot of background vocals, doing piano, Rhodes, Hammond B3. We put a lot into this. And Hurley, the surf and sport apparel company, the owner, Bob Hurley, the founder, lives in Hawaii. And long story short, he was at one of my gigs and he's like, dude, we have to do something together. So he invited us to record the album in his studio in Costa Mesa, California.
Nice.
So they basically backed the whole album.
Yeah.
They gave us the studio time. They hired the producer, engineer, Cameron Webb, who is awesome to work with him. And it was just like, we all got in the studio together and we agreed that to make the best possible recording we could, we all are going to agree to disagree for this whole project. If you have an idea and you think it should stick in there, I want you to stand up for it.
Great.
If I do an idea and you think it's like, I want you to voice your opinion. Because at the end, when we all sit down and put this thing on and listen to it, we all want to love it. And so that's what happened in there.
Very nice.
And man, it was like 2 weeks of very little sleep. We got in there as early as we could get into the building.
Yeah.
And we left out every night when we couldn't stay awake anymore. And then we just did it again, day after day after day. The first 4 days, we just like rehearsing the songs, arranging them. And then it was like 10 days of just, I think we took 2 days off. And then it was the rest of the days, I think it was like 8 days of just recording every single day, every single minute in there. It was fun, man.
That's great. And that is, so The Truth is going to be, for the foreseeable future, that's what you're taking into next year. It's going to be your main touring band. And,
Ron Artista II and The Truth. And we have some surprises that we're working on to expand the band.
Okay.
So
you have quite the sound with the trio. It'd be interesting to see what it sounds like with, I saw you a few weeks ago in San Francisco and you had some gospel singers.
Yes.
Which was,
Saida Wright.
Is that the surprise?
Okay. That's going to be awesome though. Yeah. Saida Wright and family.
It was incredible. It was, something.
Yeah. She's just, to say that Saida Wright is amazing is like an understatement. She has a natural born gift and a heart of gold.
So you guys going to record together or tour
yeah,
or both?
Yeah, I'd love to do
all
that.
The above, hopefully?
All the above, man. I love to do all the above. And it's just like, she's amazing and she's always busy and touring and stuff. So I love it when the time aligns and we can all work together. It's amazing. And then we've worked with some other friends on other instrumentation that might be coming into play. So
yeah, I've seen some pictures of some stuff happening in the studio.
Yeah,
there's pictures of you and Eric Krasno hanging out.
Yeah.
There's pictures of you and G-Love hanging
out. Yeah, G-Love, man.
You just did a bunch of
shows. We just did a lot of recording with G-Love.
Yeah, friend of the podcast, G-Love. Garrett, if you're listening to this, we're here with Ron. You're going to be opening up for him pretty soon.
No, he said that, man. But I was like, I don't know. G, he's pretty awesome, man. And we've got a chance to meet a lot of, like, big artists this year who do stuff. And I gotta say though, as awesome as Garrett G-Love is as a musician, he's even a more incredible person. Like, he's like our working relationship, however we want to call it, he's just been extremely selfless in his approach of how he's helped us not only like develop as far as a touring act and everything, but just like a lot of support behind the scenes that it's just I just have a lot of respect and thanks
that
gratitude
is,
towards Garrett.
That is really nice to hear. He's come by our office 2 times, wants to play some music and wants to sit for the podcast. And,
yeah, he's awesome.
And I agree, he's one of my favorites.
Yeah, man. Yeah, we got to meet him, and he introduces Citizen Cope.
Oh, yeah?
Dude,
yeah.
He's awesome, man. He's a really, like, he's an artist. He's like, we just met a lot of musicians this year. And then,
yeah, I remember Four Peaks. We connected you with Dan Leibowitz, and we got you up there for
the
Summer of 68 Jam or whatever that was up
dude,
there.
Dude, man, that was my first time ever meeting him.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And
you're welcome. I finally
thank
introduced
you for
somebody.
That. Yeah, you did. And man, I've never seen somebody get so many sounds out of an acoustic guitar.
Yeah, he's
it
crazy.
Just
man.
I was in awe the whole time we were jamming together, man.
Yeah.
And there might be some collaborations coming
good.
Up
I'd
with,
love to
with
see
he
you
and
guys
I
connect
this year.
Again.
So.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, man.
All right, well, Ron, before we got to get you back here for your second set at Hangtown, tell our listeners where they can find you on the internet and whatnot. How can everyone keep up with you?
Yeah, if everybody's interested, they can find me on Instagram. That's Ron Ortiz II. It's like Ron Ortiz II in the internet world. And our new album's on everywhere you can stream or
Soul Street.
Download music. Yep, Soul Street's the new album. And I'm loving it. I hope you guys are loving it. We had a lot of fun. We put a lot of love into it. And, stay tuned, because you never know when we're coming to a city near you.
Yeah, Ron's a road warrior, and I give you the jam bass guarantee. If you go out and check out one of his shows, you're if you didn't like it and you want your money back, email jam bass and I will forward the email to Ron, and he will
I will sort you out.
All right, thanks, man.
All right,
cheers.
Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha.
Say carry me along, Lord. I'm not my own. So carry me along, Lord. I am still your child.
We've reached the end of the 25th episode of the Jam Bass Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And also big thanks to Billy and Ron for chatting with us. This installment has been produced by Jake Alexander and features theme music from Clangin' and Bangin'. Microphones we use have been provided by Telefunken. You could subscribe to the Jam Bass Podcast through your favorite podcast provider, including iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and Spotify. If we're not available where you'd like to see the podcast available, please let us know. A comment or feedback of any kind and ratings are always appreciated. So please either leave a comment, give us a rating, or shoot us a note at podcast@jambass.com. Now go see live music and have a good Thanksgiving.